Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in, episode 217, What's Right with Nick Wright. Apologies on the front end for my voice. So here's the deal. This happens every year that the Chiefs have a parade. I, for the better part of 3 hours, shake hands and take pictures with, the 1,000 people maybe. And then I get on an airplane, I come back to New York, and I'm a little sick. And so I typically would maybe not be doing the show today, but this is our first show since the parade, and I want to talk about it. And so we talked about it some on the TV show. I then did a bit of a Kansas City media tour on Friday when we didn't have the TV show, and we're in the A block here, not going to really talk sports. We're going to talk about my experience there and some ways to move forward. And the ways to move forward, I'm going to steal from Jason Kander, who was in the U.S. military for a very long time, ran for U.S. Senate in Missouri, lost a very close election, then was running for mayor against my friend Quentin Lucas and dropped out of the mayoral race as he had to deal with some PTSD from his time in the military. And he went on my buddy Laszlo's radio show and podcast and presented a way forward on the scourge of gun violence in America that does not involve passing new laws, but instead involves repealing one law we already have. And I think it's a really sharp and smart way to address it. And so we'll do that. But DeMonze's here with us. DeMonze's in LA. And DeMonze, you feel free to jump in at any point. I'm going to give a little anecdote from this weekend, and then I'm going to go back to the parade, and then we're going to bounce around a bit. So this weekend, I took Deanna, our youngest, to a off-Broadway show called The Play That Goes Wrong. And it's actually really well done. It's won a bunch of awards. And the concept behind it is it's supposed to be a regular play, but everything imaginable goes wrong. And that's intentional. I'm not going to explain the play to you. But it's funny and it's well done. And in the midst of it, about 40%, halfway through the play thereabouts, off screen, or off stage, I should say, a murder takes place, and there are three loud gunshots that you hear. And I knew, the play that they're doing is called like the murder at whatever place, manor, Maversham Manor or something. And you knew something like this was coming. And those three gunshots rung out, and I flinched in like a very defined way. And I was like, oh, that's the kind of, for lack of a better term, shrapnel from what had happened Wednesday. Like the me, that was somewhere in my brain. The last time I had heard something like that was when we were scurrying off the stage at the parade, and we heard a very distinct gunshot, and the Fox security folks, who I will continue to say what a brilliant job they did, said, "Get down." Somewhere in my brain, that like really impacted and affected me. And so when I heard it again, even though, like, you know, I'm in a Broadway show and that's part of the show, I wasn't really expecting it. And my heart raced and I flinched and it was weird. And I'm a near 40-year-old man who didn't see any of the actual shooting and didn't see any of the actual victims. And it had an impact on me. And so I have spent a lot of the time since the parade talking about us failing our kids and the young people who have had, you know, preparing for these events and knowing what to do and all of that just be part of how they grow up. And I apologize that I'm kind of taking a circuitous path here, but I promise I'll land the plane. That we have a couple different types of reactions to these types of incidents. If it's like the one in Kansas City, where it appears to be gang violence that spills out into what I would call the general population, outside of where we as a society have accepted that gang violence will take place, the reaction is throw the book at them, police the streets, keep the criminals in jail, all that stuff. And when it is the type of shooting that is very unique to America, the lone wolf, usually 17 to 28-year-old loner guy who, you know, loses his mind or has been radicalized by the internet or, you know, any of the above, we go to mental health. We say we need to do more on that front. And the mental health thing really, really irritates me because while, yes, I wish we had vastly more mental health resources, I find it wildly and offensively disingenuous to claim to care about mental health and want to prioritize that and not recognize the mental health damage we're doing to a generation of kids. If I, as a near 40-year-old man, was at a play 5 days later and heard a couple obviously cinematic gunshots and my heart raced and I flinched, what about the thousands of kids at that parade? What about them? And what does that do to their mental health? What does that do to their ability to be happy, healthy, well-adjusted kids? And the answer is it's now been a problem in America for long enough, and enough people have been a party to some type of mass shooting incident that tragically we might have the data to actually do a proper sample size study to see the mental health damage that active shooter drills and that being on the periphery, much less in the mix of a mass shooting incident, what it does to people. But claiming to care about mental health and then sticking your fingers in your ear and failing to recognize the damage this uniquely American epidemic has to do with mental health, or has impacts people's mental health, I find offensive. And so I will admit I have very extreme feelings, and this is where people will get mad, and that's fine. People are allowed to disagree. I have very, very extreme feelings on guns in this country. I do not believe it to be a constitutional right. I do not believe that the way in my lifetime the Second Amendment has been understood and interpreted by the courts is correct, flatly. I think the fact that we have totally disregarded the fact that the first four words of the Second Amendment is a well-regulated militia. It is not well-regulated and it is not a militia. The fact that we have just thrown that out, I think, is a crime. Okay? So I will admit, though, I am on the extremes there. I think it is a logical fallacy. I think that if we are really talking about if you believe the reason you have a right to an AR is because you must protect yourself against a tyrannical government, well, then shouldn't you then also have the rights to any weapons you can afford? Fully automatic machine guns, drones, smart bombs. That's what the government's working with. The government comes for you. They've got suitcase nukes, guys. And so if we're going to take it to its furthest logical conclusion, and it is, no, it is our inalienable rights to be able to take on the first infantry if they come for us, well, then nukes at trade shows to go along with tanks if you can afford it, right? And I don't think many people actually believe we have those rights. So I think the Second Amendment is consistently misinterpreted, but I've lost that argument. The courts have lost that, decided I've lost that argument. The politicians, even the politicians I support, have decided they don't want to have that argument. And the guns and the gun lobby and the gun owners have won that argument. So how do we move forward? And this is where I give Jason Kander and Laszlo credit for starting this conversation, which is, instead of adding a law, repealing a law. Because there is a law that was passed nearly 20 years ago, the PLCAA, the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. And what that law did was make it illegal to sue gun manufacturers. It made you do not have the rights in America now to sue a gun manufacturer unless the gun malfunctions. And what that law has, in my opinion, and again, Jason Kander wrote an article about this, did podcasts about it, and people should check it out. It has allowed the gun manufacturers to operate in an area somewhat outside of capitalism, where they do not have to put in the protections or safeguards that every other industry does, because they don't have to be worried about being held to account in a multi-billion dollar civil lawsuit. Now, removing this law would not guarantee anything. It wouldn't guarantee you would win your lawsuit. It wouldn't guarantee any of those things. But what it would do is guarantee that you would have a chance to find out, okay, Are they marketing these guns to children through the discovery process of a lawsuit? Do they have smart gun technology that they easily could be implemented that they're choosing not to because it would cost an extra $12 a gun and they've decided not worth it? And so, to use an analogous situation, Demonte, you're not old enough to remember this, but when I was around 18 years old, anybody, and I'm very, very, very fortunate that I didn't get hooked on this, anybody who wanted Oxy could get it. It was handed out like candy in at clubs, you parties.
Got like Advil at any,
yes. Anybody that wanted Oxy could get it. It was that ubiquitous. And the reason, and it's the cause of the opioid epidemic or a big cause of it. The reason that changed was because the opioid makers got sued into oblivion. They lost billions and billions of dollars in lawsuits. And because of that, they regulated themselves. And because my dream of a proper interpretation of the Second Amendment, that ship seems to have sailed. We are just going to pretend that there is nothing you can do when you just need to look to any other country in the world to see, well, there's obvious things you can do. And my dream of a gun buyback program and it not being legal for individual citizens to possess these types of weapons, that's gone. But without this law, would these gun companies start to operate in their own financial best interests and create their own gun registry and to enforce their own background checks? And Kander speculated they might create their own insurance companies about having to purchase your own gun insurance. They might, because the fear of being sued into oblivion because you knowingly and wantonly marketed these guns to kids, to people who you knew were mentally unstable, sold them to people with a history of domestic violence, all those things. If they just had to worry about being held to account, how much would that change things? How much would that change how they operate? Because what we know is that this will simply keep happening. And we will simply continue on the path of everyone at this point having either been on the receiving end or the, I guess, giving end of a wellness check. And it's a tragic state of affairs. And I'm going to tell one anecdote that I did not tell on the TV show. But I'm going to tell it now, and then we're going to move on. When I talk about what this is doing to our kids. And Demonte, I apologize on the front end. I don't know how this is going to impact or affect you. So yeah, I maybe should have told you this beforehand. So the Wednesday, so the parade happens Wednesday. And just put me on camera, please. The parade happens Wednesday. And again, we were fine, right? We were fine. We literally had security with us. We were fine. I am of the 800,000 people there. There were hundreds of thousands, I would say, in more danger than I was, okay? So this is not a woe is me. This is just, despite that, this is the impact it has on our people, especially our young people. So Deanna was staying with my mom. And, you know, I sent the text before they had even seen the news. DeMonte didn't even know yet. Dior didn't even know yet that it had happened. And I sent the text, we're fine. Because I did not want you guys to see the news and not be able to, you know, not know what was going on. But your mom's phone hadn't been working great at the parade. And then when we got back to the hotel, your mom laid down, take a nap. And I called my mom and FaceTimed her. And your little sister, who's 10 years old, said, I was outside of the hotel. I was walking around. I pace when I'm on the phone. And your little sister said, hey, can I talk to mommy? And I said, nah, she's taking a nap. And she said, no, let me talk to mommy. And I said, she's taking a nap. It's been a tough day. You know, sorry. She was like, oh, okay. And I was like, if she wakes up before, you know, you go to bed, we'll call. And that was that. And then the next day, Deanna and I went to dinner. And she told me that when we got off the phone, she was worried that I was lying to her. That her mom had been shot and I didn't want to tell her. And that, while is irrational from an adult's perspective, I get it. It is, for whatever, and again, we were on the furthest periphery. But for kids, this is now something she carries. And if we are just okay that that is going to be the world in which we live, then I don't even want to say so be it, because I'm not. But don't you fucking dare ever tell me again you care about mental health, or you care about, you know, the youth of America. Because we are opting into living like this and acting as if there is no possible solution, when every other developed country in the world has figured it out, is not acceptable. All right, talk a little sports. Come back. What's right? With Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, you will be eating stress-free this spring. Each meal is chef-crafted, fresh, and dietitian-approved. More importantly, they are never frozen and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up all day long. Try meals with premium ingredients like filet mignon, truffle butter, and shrimp. Restaurant-quality food that you do not have to prep, cook, or clean up, delivered right to your doorstep. And if you need to change your deliveries, you can pause or reschedule whenever you like. Factor is your solution for fast and premium meals. Also, for the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So, what are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/NickWright50 and use code NickWright50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NickWright50 at factormeals.com/NickWright50 to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your next. Fuel up fast, eat better, and get back to what you love doing this spring with Factor.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in What's Right with Nick Wright, episode 217. So the major story from this weekend, obviously, was one of the worst All-Star games ever played. And I think that this is mostly the media's fault. And by that, I mean people respond to incentives. We have changed NBA coverage in a way to where we reward truly nothing, other than postseason performance and success. There is nothing about the journey that we find cool, that we talk about it being worthwhile, and so players have responded accordingly. Players initially responded with load management, and teams were obviously a big piece of that, which was, well, why would I care about playing 78 games if that's going to make me 10% less fresh for the postseason, when all that you guys are going to talk about, my legacy, where I rank, how good I am, is based on how I do in the postseason. And so, of course, a casualty of that is going to be the All-Star game. Once upon a time, NBA media rewarded guys who kicked ass in All-Star games. It was part of their legacy. It wasn't a huge part, but it was part of it. How you looked in the closing minutes of these All-Star games, it no longer is. It's now totally irrelevant. It's now not. If I were to say out loud on TV, hey guys, LeBron has more All-Star game points than anyone in history by a mile, I would be laughed at. People would say, are you kidding me? How many rings does he have? If somebody said, hey, part of Dame now, his resume, is he won an All-Star Game MVP, people would say, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. The guy's never even won a game in the conference finals. So, if you actually want to fix the All-Star Game, DeMonze, I think the answer is pretty simple. The winning conference gets home court advantage in the finals.
Yeah.
It's what baseball did with their All-Star game. You can say that's unfair, but I don't know how unfair it is, because here's the thing. The East and the West play unbalanced schedules as is. So having a 58-win Eastern Conference team have home court advantage over a 56-win Western Conference team in a year if the West is the deeper, tougher conference, that wasn't, quote, fair, unquote, to begin with. And folks can say, well, still some guys won't care. Well, then those guys won't play. The coaches will care, because anyone who's coaching an All-Star game, he's coaching an All-Star game because his team has the best record at the break, or one of the best records at the break. He thinks he has a real chance of playing in the final, of coaching in the finals. Exactly. Right. So, and you would be able to find, even if it's 12 guys and a few of them don't care, those guys wouldn't play. The coach could then just pick the guys who are locked in. Now, if you don't want to do that, then I'm here to tell you there is no obvious fix. The international versus the North America, that could work for a year. My idea from yesterday of, because right now, the winning players, DeMonte, get $100,000. The losing players get $25,000. I think having that $125,000 be in duffel bags in cash along the baseline, and the losing players have to present it to the winning players after they get all the money, could again briefly, temporarily impact competitiveness. But overall, yeah, guys respond to incentives. And what we reward in NBA coverage is postseason success and only postseason success. So as long as that is how the league is discussed, everything else is going to take a back seat to that. So those are my fixes. Go ahead, pal.
So another focus on the weekend is the buddy-buddy stuff. Luka
yeah,
and Jokic seem to be having a soap opera thing going on. The NBA yeah, in general seems to be a little bit too focused on the story these days and not the basketball. What do you think about that?
Well, that's again, I would argue. Yeah, I mean, that's again, I would argue, a symptom of how the league is covered. The league, I think that, and I can check the data on this. I think NBA television shows, or my show when we talk NBA, the highest ratings are during the playoffs, and I think the second highest ratings are during free agency, not during the regular season. The drama and the free agency and the player movement has has become far more, I don't know if it's interesting or if it's just what we discuss, or maybe it is what the fans want. I don't know. That has become the second biggest part of an NBA year. Is not the regular season. It is the offseason. It's the playoffs one and the offseason two. All right, next.
You think Luka and Jokic would ever team up?
Well, I mean, Jokic said, I love Denver, so Luka would have to come to me. I don't think so. I think Luka would be more likely to go to a more international city, a coastal place. But I do think that it is more than on the board that Luka doesn't spend his whole career in Dallas. Again, because, listen, the folks will come for Luka too. Let the Mavs go out in round one this year. And I don't care if he averages 34-9-9. Folks are going to be at his doorstep saying, where's the wins? Where's the finals appearances? Where's the championships?
Oh, I was nodding my head for something completely different. But yeah. Fair enough, that one too.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Another huge story of the weekend was LeBron. Supposedly, he could have ended up playing in Golden State with Steph. Yeah. But he's claiming that he didn't know about it. I think he might have known about it. But the story here is him not knowing about it is if he would have gone. I'm sorry, I'm a little choked up. But
you're right.
LeBron obviously says that he wants to end his career with the Lakers. You're the LeBron whisperer. What do you think?
Listen, I think he does want to end his career with the Lakers. I don't want him to. I think he does want to. I don't trust the Lakers front office or ownership at all. At all. I think the Lakers ownership is bad. And I don't think Rob Pelinka's done a good job. And when they make good moves, that, you know, the front office making these hard calls, and when they make the Russell Westbrook trade, it's what do you want us to do? LeBron made us do it. I mean, this team has tried for 3 years to acquire Buddy Hield. Couldn't find a way to do it. Daryl got him for Korkmaz and 3 second-round picks. So I don't think the Lakers are very well run. LeBron going to Golden State can't happen. He can't go to Steph's team. They would have to find a neutral site, if you will. They would have to find a third-party team, and the Warriors are never trading Steph, so that's not going to happen. Hold on, I apologize. Deanna, come here. You were
saying LeBron Deanna's not here. Go to Golden State because it's Steph's team, and it's like the
Deanna, go,
power
go to the
over
deli
it?
And get me another one of these waters. Thank you, baby. I'm just saying, yeah, go ahead. I'm still on the air. Go ahead. Sorry, I need another water because I'm a little under the weather. So I'm sending Deanna to go get it for me. Deanna's here today because she doesn't have school. I just think it would look bad. I think LeBron doesn't want to ever be traded. And so that's why the Golden State trade never got off the ground. I think if he wants to leave, he wants to do it on his own volition. But he is not going to go join Steph's team. You can say, oh, he did it with D-Wade. Very different. D-Wade, yes, he had won the title, but he had won a title 5 years before LeBron got there. And the Heat had just missed the playoffs. And as great as D-Wade was, nobody ever actually thought D-Wade was better than LeBron.
People have been putting LeBron against Curry, I feel like, throughout his career.
Exactly.
It was never like that with D-Wade.
Right, exactly right. And so even though LeBron and Steph are buddies now, and I think them playing together, I'd love the old man team. LeBron, Steph, and Durant, those three guys, you know, somewhere,
yeah,
all playing together. I think it'd be super fun, the three of the oldest players in the league, still the standard bearers of the league. But LeBron can't go to Golden State, in my opinion. Can't do it. So where would I think he's going to stay with the Lakers. His son is at USC. Bryce is, his whole family's there.
You think it could have been a tactic to get Golden State to try and get to draft Bronny?
No. Here's the thing. I do not think this was a LeBron spurred thing. I think it was a Draymond spurred thing. I think Draymond wanted it. And Draymond pitched it.
Didn't he go on and say something to... No. Sorry, I think that's a different... Yeah. Never mind.
No, Draymond did. Draymond did go out and say, like, I had came across my desk and I told him we can't trade Kuminga. It was weird. I don't fully buy what Draymond said, but set that aside. I think it was Draymond was the impetus here, and Draymond and LeBron obviously have the same agent. Now... Here's what I'll tell you. This offseason, there are four places that I would love to see LeBron go. They're all in the Eastern Conference, and they all make sense, and they are all better run than the Lakers, and they all could win a title with LeBron at this level, in my opinion. The first one, go ahead. You go. Go, DeMonte. If you want to guess, because you don't know who I'm going to say.
I figured you'd have the Knicks on there, maybe Cleveland.
Okay, so stop. Hold on. So let's go. No, because I want you to go one by one. The Knicks are on there. Now,
okay.
LeBron understandably does not like James Dolan and has said he wouldn't play for him. Rich, his agent, has an old kind of, I don't know if beef's the right word, but a history with Leon Rose and World Wide West, who are running the Knicks. So that part of it would make it a little awkward. But Yes, the Knicks, if LeBron came there this offseason, because here's the thing LeBron has the ability to do this offseason if he wants to. Go somewhere and play for very little money. Go to an already built team that doesn't have to carve out cap space. I don't know that he wants to do that. LeBron is notoriously cheap and wants to own a team one day. So he needs So he needs the money. Thank you, Deanna. It needs the money sounds weird, but I mean, if he wants to be a primary owner of something that's going to cost billions of dollars, leaving 40, 50 million on the table, doesn't sound like he wants to do it. But yes, the Knicks with Jalen there could win the title, I believe, with this level LeBron. Who's the next team you were going to say?
I said Cleveland.
That's correct.
But copy?
Cleveland's the next team. They don't have a small forward they trust. They have two guards. They have big men. They don't know how to win. It would be an awesome third and final act for LeBron. I love that idea. I don't think he's going to do it, but that team would be good enough to win the East. Again, with LeBron at this level, Mitchell, Garland, Mobley, Allen, that team, yes. All right, can you guess the last two?
The Heat.
The Heat are absolutely the next team. Yep. I love the ownership, front office, and coach. Playoff Jimmy, LeBron, Bam. He's been there. His family loved it there. That, you know, they might go to the finals again this year. They haven't been able to quite get over the hump. The Heat. And then the last one.
Last year.
Right. Do you have a four? Do you know who the fourth one is?
Fourth and final. I'm either going to go. I feel like it's this. I mean, you said take little money, so maybe the Sixers, but I feel like it might be the
That's
Nets.
That's right. It's the Sixers.
Oh, it's the Sixers?
No, Copy. It's the Sixers. Yes, because while the Sixers are the only team that I listed of the Knicks, Cavs, Heat, the Sixers are the one team that has a player that is clearly better than LeBron. Jalen Brunson, I don't think is better than LeBron. It's close. I don't think he's better. Donovan's not better than LeBron. Jimmy's not better than LeBron. Even year 21, old-ass LeBron.
I think if Jalen Brunson were a little bit bigger, you'd think that maybe he was better than LeBron.
Yes. Well, if he were a little bit bigger, he'd be better. He's an excellent player. But in the NBA, there's real – you know what I mean? Like, there's real – there's a reason in all of NBA history, the only guys under 6'6" to be the best players on a champion are Isaiah Thomas and Steph Curry. And Brunson's way under 6'. You know what I mean? It's really hard. Really, really hard. And so, but the reason why I think Philly would work for Bron is because while Embiid's better, that team has never won. That team, forget winning a title, forget being in the finals, has never been in the conference finals. They've been, the Philadelphia 76ers have been in the conference finals or further once since Dr. J was there, the 01 Iverson team. Embiid's never been past round two. So LeBron showing up and that, yes, that would work. I don't think it's realistic, but that's where I would like him to go. I do not think he is going to go any of those places. I think he's probably going to stay in LA, which, you know, as a LeBron guy, I don't love, but I think it's what he wants. All right, let's go to Steph versus Sabrina.
All right, so All-Star Weekend was a joke, except for the three-point contest between Steph and Sabrina. I think it was a really huge moment for sports and basketball in general.
Yep.
What was the story for you here? So the competition, the commentary around it, or anything else poke out to you?
Yeah, what poked out to me is I think women's basketball is having a real moment right now, and it thrills me. I think Sabrina going toe-to-toe with Steph at the exact same time that Caitlin Clark is showing the world that women's basketball can get big-time ratings. Big, big-time ratings.
I like Caitlin Clark a lot.
She's awesome, man.
Yeah.
She is awesome. And to circle back to what I was saying was wrong to Monze with the All-Star game, Jay Williams, and I'm going to try and take a shot at Jay, he refused to call her great, Caitlin Clark. And his answer was, she's never won a title. And this is what I'm saying we've done to basketball. Caitlin Clark is, by any metric, one of the greatest female college basketball players ever, one of the greatest college basketball players ever. But because they, you know, they lost in the national final last year instead of winning the national final, you can't call her a great. Now, if the conversation was, is she the greatest female college player ever? That's a different discussion. Then if you want to say you have to at least win one title to be the greatest player ever at your thing, so
it's like
be it.
These but guys forget how hard willing, it is to win a title.
Of course. To not even be willing to call her a great is crazy. And so I loved what Sabrina did. And my suggestion for All-Star Weekend next year is Steph versus Sabrina Part 2 and Caitlin versus Dame in a super long range, like logo threes competition. I think that would be awesome.
That'd be sick.
I think Caitlin versus Dame on like essentially the four-point competition and Steph versus Sabrina in that. So, yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. And I like how the NBA guys are embracing the women's hoopers because they're awesome. All right, we've got a Never a Doubt update, and I'm going to continue to take some cough drops. Quick break, right back. What's right?
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, save $30 on the American-made steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
All right, welcome back in. What's Right with Nick Wright? All right, so we've got some Never a Doubt updates for you. So let's roll through some of them. Father and son. Look at that from Seth Warland. I mean, that is a baby with the Never a Doubt tattoo. And Jeff Willett with both kids with the Never a Doubt tattoos. I love it. Though, and the Never a Doubt tattoos are incredibly well produced. And the way they were able to kind of mimic the exact font that I have on my arm is unbelievable. All right, let's keep rolling through them because I then need to not talk for the next few hours for TV. Scotty Might Know out in San Diego, those folks. Summer Campbell Collins has a great one with a Category 2 take sign. I wonder if they were out at the parade. That's great. And I think we've got something to play you guys. That's awesome. That is really great. Those folks, I think, back on the show for the second time. All right, let's get through a few more before I've got to go. Ryan Hodges and Tommy Spears with their tattoos watching the Super Bowl. Mark Hernandez, he's got one along with a LeBron James action figure. Dallas says the tattoo didn't arrive in time, so he's wrote Nat on his arm. Maybe not the greatest idea, but I understand. And then, of course, Mahomes is Never a Doubt, which was super dope. All right, DeMonze, great job today. I'm going to answer one listener question real quick. Matt Gronke says, Nick, is Harrison Butker a lock Hall of Famer? No. I love Butker, but kickers are making the Hall of Fame incredibly, incredibly difficult. He is building a resume. But right now, the only lock Hall of Famers involved in the Chiefs dynasty are Mahomes, Kelsey, Hill, and Chris Jones. Those are the Andy, obviously. There are no other lock Hall of Famers. Butker is building the postseason resume, but he's going to have to do it far longer. He is unbelievable, and I got to spend some nice time with him at the parade. All right, programming update. We are off. Go ahead, DeMonze.
Nothing. Was fed Kadarius Toney and
the producers always setting you up to fail. We are off Thursday and then all of next week, off TV and podcast next week. So we will be back 2 weeks from today for the next episode of What's Right. Again, I apologize for my voice, but I wanted to be on the air with you guys today. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Great job, Demonze. And we will see you guys 2 weeks from today for What's Right. See you on TV at 3 o'clock Eastern, hopefully with a better voice. What's Right. Hey, it's Nick Wright. Thank you so much for watching. Please do us a favor. Click subscribe. It helps my ego. And Demonze's got a financial bonus writing on a number of YouTube subscribers. So help him out. And also, click the bell. I don't know what the bell does, but they tell me to tell you to click the bell. And your audio listeners, people that have commutes, drives, whatever it is, subscribe to the podcast as well, wherever you get the podcast. Same show, just in your ears instead of through your eyes. All that. Check it out. Appreciate y'all.